It is my joy to introduce our good friend, the Reverend Dr. Scott Dillard. He's a frequent visiting minister here at Mountain Light. Dr. Dillard is a professor of rhetoric at Georgia College and State University in Milledgeville. He has a bachelor's in speech communication from Blackburn College and an MS and PhD in speech communication performance studies from Southern Illinois University. His areas of expertise and interest are performance studies, narrative, queer theory, gay spirituality, and service learning. Reverend Dillard is also the former dean of the Mountain School for Congregational Leadership. Reverend Dillard is an ordained interfaith minister who speaks in Unitarian pulpits throughout the Southeast. Scott and his husband, Chris Lamphere, who is a member of our church, live in Milledgeville. Scott and Chris have a daughter and two grandchildren, which I think we heard about on Father's Day, and one on the way, I just found out today. The title of Reverend Dillard's sermon today is The Gift of the Uncertain. Scott Dillard.
I just wonder who stole that picture from wherever. Thank you for finding a nice one. We don't really do confession in the UU church. But I'm going to start with three confessions this morning. Here's the first confession. I don't know what I'm going to say here today. I was speaking very briefly with Gail this morning about procrastination. And I'm a terrible, terrible procrastinator. I hardly ever write anything for you until the morning I'm supposed to be here. So someone from your church will contact me and say, we need a sermon topic. And I try to turn that around quickly because I know they want to do stuff with that and put publicity out there, etc. And so I write something down, make sure that I've copied myself on that so I can remember what it was, and then start letting myself think about that topic in the meantime. So things are rolling around in my head all that time. So it's not unproductive. I'm not 100% totally turning it off and procrastinating. There's stuff in my head and in my mind that might be used. But I go to bed on Saturday night, and I think, I don't know what I'm going to say to those people. I think I might know, but I don't know. So, as you can imagine, I get up really early on Sunday morning. So this morning it was a little after 4 o'clock, I think, when I got up. And I got my tea together, and I said, oh, let's just get on the computer and play for a while, oh, you know, procrastinating some more, or turn on the TV. But I made myself sit down and start to write some of this stuff out here. So I do have some prepared remarks. But in each moment of our time here today, those remarks will be fraught with uncertainty. Most of what I've just told you right now, I had no idea I was going to say. Part of that was because I had a little conversation with Gail, right? I didn't know that was going to happen. I'm glad it did. I'm uncertain, even with what I've written on this page, what my exact word choices might be, of what thoughts might pop into my head and lead me down a new road to a new insight. I'm uncertain today of what your response will be. As I speak, I'm watching for cues, nonverbal cues, some verbal cues that will tell me if you're with me or not. Confession number two. I've said some of this already. See? I don't know. Okay. in that week leading up to things, where I'm going to preach with you, and I finally ever try to finalize some remarks there, it often makes me feel anxious. And my anxiety comes out of the uncertain, right? Can I trust that I will get up on that Sunday morning and actually be able to write anything? There might come some Sunday morning where nothing comes out. And what will we do? So I live in that uncertainty with you every time I agree to preach here. Confession number three. Once I get a sermon outlined, I only have a vague sense of what I will actually say. I know that the words I have written here will probably be spoken, but I also know I'll be inspired to speak more than those words. Because there's many unknowns that I cannot control in any situation. And one thing that we always taught when, as Gail mentioned, when I was the dean of the leadership school at the Mount, was part of our problems that we have in working with other people is we want to control the outcome of something. And once you learn that you cannot control the outcome, you can only make an offer into a space, and other people are going to do something with that offer, can you relax into that situation? So I don't know what any of your responses will be. And related to that is a final confession. I never know if any of my talks with you are successful. Now, I kind of know because oftentimes people speak to me afterwards and I know that something that I said either moved them or inspired them to share some of their own experience. And I often have a good feeling myself in that immediate aftermath. But every time I get into the car, when I leave you, as we're pulling away, I say to Chris, was that okay? Was that any good? Right? And I would say 99% of the time he assures me that it is. He's been honest a few times. It was all right. And if I really sort of really believe him, because sometimes he'll tell me how good it was, I know I can probably repeat that sermon somewhere else if I'm called to do so. But Chris also knows that when I go to repeat that sermon, it will not be the same sermon because they are not the same people. And I'll have to adjust that. And new things will have occurred to me. And new things will spontaneously pop up. Now, that's all sort of prelude to speaking in a more general way about uncertainty. Because when we speak about uncertainty, we're really speaking about several things. In the first sense, we're speaking of the future, of not knowing what will come next. We just don't know. We are uncertain. That's the unknown that we cannot predict. In the second sense, we're speaking of that which we know to be true, what, through our lived experiences, we have come to believe. We're either certain of something as a truth or uncertain about it. And we'll say more about that in a moment. But let's go back to that first sense of not knowing what comes next. Now, a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to control what will come next, right? We want to be able to predict what's going to happen in any given situation. But I'm going to read to you some words by a writer named Rachel Barenblatt, who I think writes very clearly about this. Because she says, I like certainty. I like feeling rooted. I like knowing where I'm going and what happens next. And I know that in all of those things, there's danger. Because it's easy for certainty to become my idol, the thing I serve. And if I'm serving my needs for certainty, my need to have answers and to know what comes next, then I'm not the person I want to be. As the work of spiritual direction reminds me, God or meaning is often found precisely in the uncertain, in the not knowing, in the sense of mystery that can suffuse the world in which we live, if we allow ourselves to be open to it. When we become too attached to the things we think are certain, there's a risk that our spirits can calcify and harden. We can become spiritually unbending. This limits our range of spiritual motion, which can in turn leave us unable to open, even if we later find that we want to try. And in the second sense, this notion of truth. This is from an article called Wisdom of Uncertainty. The ability to question things can be an art form. Healthy skepticism is a boon in a world that bombards us with so much information. It teaches us self-astonishment, where instead of trying to possess truth, we are possessed by it. When we think we have all the answers, we become stuck in our knowledge, which is a safe and comfortable place for our ego, but a lousy place for individuation. We must ask ourselves, are the walls of my comfort zone elastic and pliant, or rigid and dogmatic? Are the lines I've drawn in the sand of my soul flexible and open-minded, or inflexible and closed-minded? Are the answers I found open to questioning, or are they closed to myopic regurgitation? Those who live examined lives understand that humans fail, that humans fall, and falling means that sometimes we need to change. Now, if we go back to that first sense, not knowing what comes next or what will happen next. Let me give you sort of this by way of an example to sort of flesh that notion out. I sometimes teach a course in interpersonal communication. And in that course, we cover a theory called relational dialectics. This is a theory introduced by two women named Leslie Baxter and Barbara Montgomery. And in part of this theory, they state that there are tensions that exist within relationships. Sort of polar opposites of one. We always desire to be on one side or the other, and we want to shift back and forth. We don't want too much of one or too much of the other, that we try to strike a balance between these dialectics. But we're constantly in conversation with them. And one of the dialectics is between certainty and uncertainty. Certainty is one factor that bonds the relationship. We need to be somewhat certain about the behavior of our partner, don't we? We need to predict how they're going to respond to some things. We also need to know that they're going to be there for us and to do the things that we think they will do for us, or that they've said that they will do for us. So it's a promise that keeps and makes both parties comfortable. But on the contrary, being so predictable can also make the relationship dreary. And we long for an element of surprise or ambiguity to shake the relationship up a little bit. These can be just mundane things, right? There's plenty of you in here that are in long-term relationships, right? So you will say something to your husband, your wife, your long-term partner, and before you even finish it, you pretty much know the answer to what you have posed, right? Or the response that's going to come out of that person's mouth. And rather than just accepting that, we sometimes say, "I knew that's what you were going to say," as if you were disappointed. Right? And in some regards, you are, because someday you hope to ask that question and there become a new answer. Right? Because we all yearn for that as well. Right? We want sameness, but But we also want some uniqueness in our relationship. We don't want it to be too settled. Too much predictability leads to boredom and complacency. Too much uncertainty, though, on the other hand, leads to chaos and mistrust. So we seek a balance of both within our relationships. Sometimes when we're interested in one, then the other, depending on where we're at, and we're hoping we're communicating that well with our partner. Another sort of quick example is this summer, rather than having the whole summer off, the university, in their wisdom, decided that I should be chair for one whole month. Now, this is a weird sort of rule. We had a woman who's been chair for many years retire, but she struck a deal that she would come back and fulfill chair duties next year, but really more on a limited time basis, and while we're looking for a new full-time chair. In order for them to have that deal with her, the state of Georgia will only let them hire her back if she's been gone for 1 month. So I'm the chair. I don't know what a chair does. I can't predict any of this. I have a certain bit of knowledge because I go to the chair to get things. So I figure maybe that's kind of what a chair does. But I really wasn't ready for what it was. Do you want to know what it really is in today's world? What a chair does is sits in front of a computer. And they learn all these different little systems that the university has bought, all these various programs, so they can enter in the data that somebody else wants to use somewhere else. And by the way, the system that they created was really meant for that person that's mining the data on the back end and not you as the idiot who knows nothing about technology on the front end. The people that work in my department year-round have to have their time cards approved. Of course, this has to be done on the computer. So I thought, I will take the uncertainty out of this. I will go down to the dean's office and say, how do I do this? And the administrative assistant says, oh, I don't know. Wait till Jamie comes back. She does it in our office. I said, well, who doesn't for you? She says, well, the dean's supposed to, but he can't figure it out, so Jamie just does it. And I thought, oh, this should be fun. So I thought I found it, and I thought I had it. And then everything was up there on the screen, but it wasn't time yet to approve it. So I went in on the day, the last day, that you had to approve it, and I couldn't find it again. Why is everybody shaking their head? Yes, right. This is all about uncertainty, right? And I wanted to be frustrated with this experience, and normally I would be. And sometimes I just give up. I just say, I'm not doing this. This is not really what you hired me for. But this indeed was what they have hired me for. And if I don't do this, these people aren't going to get paid. So I went down and I did find Jamie. And she started to show me, and she could see my eyes glazing over, and she said, oh, let's just go up to your office and we'll do it together. And we did, and I took lots of notes. And then we got in there to prove it, and Jamie had left, and I could not approve two of the three people. And one of them was saying, had some sort of hold on it. So I went down to this person. I said, why does this have a hold on your hours? And so she says, I don't know. That shouldn't be. And so she comes to my office. And we call various people. The one thing I will say about Georgia College, if someone doesn't know something, they will transfer you to someone who does like that. They will give you that number. They will make sure you got the right person. So I got the right person, and she said, oh, that's a glitch on our end that we didn't fix, and switching this over from Mary Jean to you. Here, let me do that. So then we approved her. I said, well, that only approves 1 week, whereas the second week, she goes, well, she didn't put any time in for this last week. And Eva's sitting there going, of course I put time. I'm right here right now. I'm putting in the time this week. And she's the woman on the other end digging around. She goes, oh, Eva, tell Eva she made a mistake. She put it in for next week, which hasn't happened yet. See, she's really trying to undo uncertainty altogether. She just already worked. And then the third person, I said, there's nothing for Barbara. And they go, well, Barbara didn't put anything in. And then I call over to the office and they say, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you. Barbara said she forgot to put it in. She went on vacation and you need to put it in for her. Now, something that should have taken 3 clicks took me 1.5 hours, right? As much as I was certain of it, I knew there was gonna be a lot of uncertainty to this. And I just needed to embrace this. Yeah? Or I was going to drive myself insane. Now, in this second sense of uncertainty, when we talk about truths, that we believe to be so, let's go there now. We are certainly surrounded with people who speak as if they know the truth with a capital T about all things in life. But one only has to look at your own life to know that truth can be rather contingent and rather fleeting. What we believe to be true for us right now is not likely to be the same as what we believe to be true at an earlier stage in our lives. And if that is so, then certainly we can imagine that the truth that we hold dear right now may also shift in the future. Articles of faith are truth claims that seek to limit our understanding of our world and our circumstances. Now, as you use, we are pretty darn accustomed to challenging this notion of enduring truth and to embrace the notion of uncertainty. Our principles are not dogma, but rather guides on our journey. So you know our 7 principles, right? Yeah, right here at the beginning of this book, they have them, right? You'd think after all these years I could just rattle them off. I have to look them up every time. Our 4th principle says that we seek a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We conduct this search by seeking the sources of our living tradition. And by the way, those sources, because we oftentimes read the principles and don't look at the sources, right? Those sources include direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all culture, which moves us to renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. We also have the sources of words and deeds of prophetic people which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. And we look to all the world's religions which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. We are open to the uncertainty of not knowing as much as of knowing. We are careful not to claim too much. We know that what we believe to be true is just a small part of the overall structure of truth, a glimpse, a partiality. So today, I say to you a couple of things. 1, I don't know what you think of what I've said. I don't know if it resonates with you. I don't know if you even followed it. I don't know if you will take the message with you once you leave here. 2, I don't know if I've delivered to you any truths that make the uncertain certain or allow you to live more comfortably in the uncertain. And most importantly, 3, I do know that when I get into the car to leave, I will turn to Chris and ask, was that any good? I didn't even want to bring up the where you go eat thing, because that's the biggest, isn't it? Yeah. You need to come up with a new, fresh answer. Yeah. He will be thrilled. Chris actually wanted to go to Taco Bell the other day. I almost fell off my chair. Because I always say that as a joke, and he really, there was something there he wanted. So that
was trying to surprise.
It was a nice surprise, yes.
Well, I was thinking about early on, and you were talking about this rigidity with which some people hold their truths.
Yes.
And think this is partially what's wrong with the many religious establishments
right.
in this country. They know the truth.
Right.
And Emmett, you can't shake that.
Right.
And so they have boxed themselves in this concrete thing which has no exit or ingress.
Well, that's why the true faith thing becomes so difficult. Once I believe this is true, now I have faith in it. No amount of evidence will shake that from me. I'm not going to get political on this, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
I think what I heard from you want positive feedback from anyone.
Sure you do.
Or with your partner, doesn't have to be a lot of people. Everyone likes to know that there's something positive or negative.
That's
a
right.
negative could lead to a heavier discussion.
That's right.
But positive is what we want.
Yeah, sure. I'm by the way not begging you to come to me and tell me that this was good. I'm okay. Yeah. Yeah.
One word caught my ear because it seems to be the thing about unpredictable stuff. Is truth is sometimes contingent.
Yes.
And
I believe that to be true.
Sometimes, you know, people say situational ethics is not a good thing. But you know, we're just living our ordinary lives, and circumstance does make a difference.
Sure does.
In your perception of things, how you react to things, what you can do or cannot do about things.
I agree. Yes. I'll get you the next thing. I'm sorry.
I was just thinking about the topic in relation to a book I read a couple years ago by Alan Watts.
Yeah.
And as I recollect, his message was certainty constrains your freedom, and uncertainty opens up opportunity.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, first of all, you just were strangely speaking to me today. I just recorded my first podcast yesterday and I went with a really different format than when I prepare a sermon. So
mm-hmm.
it's just great to pick your brain and hear how you do it. And then also, as an employee of Dalton State, we use that weird timesheet approval thing, and it's
right.
just psycho. But I just want to say, for what it's worth, first of all, I'm a little bit like Kevin that Bruce described. I'm a super introvert, but I feel like I need to say, you're the reason why I went to the seminary and why I'm now a faith minister.
Well, here's my certainty. I am certain that we appreciate hearing from someone that we know cares about us. and has had an effect on the congregation in many ways. So we thank you for coming for so many years. And we want you to come back for many more years. Our close